When I arrived at my own home, Zuleika came forth to meet me with so well-acted a show of affection and pleasure that I felt ashamed of my fears. To my anxious inquiries as to how she had fared in my absence, and whether she had seen anything of the king, for I was so jealously unhappy I forgot to hide my feelings, and wished to see whether she would show any embarrassment at the mention of his name, she raised her fine eyes to my face in languid surprise, and without the slightest trace of embarrassment said somewhat coldly, "The king? What have I to do with the king? Did you desire that I should see him?"
"I'd, sir?"
said I, "No. A thousand times, no. But I half feared his curiosity might prompt him to see you, and I had moreover, a strange vision in which you seemed to speak with him."
"A vision," said Zuleika, contemptuously, "and if you had a vision, am I to be suspected?
Nay, but your jealousy carries you too far, Ahimsemen, you art beyond all reason." And she turned her back upon me as though to leave the room in her indignation. But I followed her, and with many apologies, strove to make my peace with her, vowing that she was an angel of truth and goodness, and I was a jealous fool, whose love rendered him, even as she said, unreasonable. And so we made it up, and Zuleika got out her harp and sang to me and did all that was possible to show how she welcomed my return, till I vowed to myself that of a truth the mirror must have lied, and it was well I had destroyed it. Although Zuleika affected to know nothing of the king, she told me of Artemisia's visit, and amused me much by mimicking the whole scene, acting the part of the queen with a haughty gracefulness that was but half acting. She so assured me of the discretion she had shown in answering the questions of the queen that I had small apprehension when in a few days she was sent for to visit Artemisia. When Zuleika entered the queen's apartments, she found her surrounded by costly treasures, of every kind, rich silken stuffs, interwoven with gold thread, and spangled with glittering jewels, fine veils of snowy gossamer, fabrics elaborately embroidered, priceless ornaments of rare workmanship, scattered on every side, while the queen herself, as she rose and advanced a few steps to meet Zuleika, a mark of the greatest honor she could give, made a striking contrast to the ambitious girl whose aspiring mind made her already picture herself as occupying the position of the proud Artemisia, the one born to rule, and surrounded from her cradle with all the appanages of royalty, beautiful still with the ripened beauty of mature summer or early autumn of life, taller than the ordinary height of women, and though far from being stout, yet enough so to give a more majestic appearance to her handsome figure, a queen in every gesture, every thought. The other, smaller, slighter, with the fragile delicate beauty of a blush rose, the graceful caressing manner of a child, yet with an ambition as keen, a heart as proud, a temper as indomitable as that of the haughty queen, before whom she was constrained to affect a humility she did not feel, with a cunning as deep, an intellect as keen, as Artemisia's own, and a capability of accommodating herself to the circumstances of the moment, which the impatient queen did not possess, and with a calm indifference to all but her own interest, an insensibility to all deep emotions, which the passionate elder woman could not have understood. Artemisia could act when it suited her purpose, and feign a friendliness she did not feel to hide her real intentions, but with her the graciousness was forced, the deception a matter of study, and an effort to herself, while with Zuleika the acting was instinctive, she was always acting, always posing to herself as well as to others. In the solitude of her own chamber she posed to herself as the possessor of an emotional character as foreign to her real nature as fire is to ice. She depicted passions as she had seen them displayed by others, and mimicked the most intense manifestations of love or hate, joy or despair, without feeling the smallest throb of these emotions herself. It was because she was a mere mimic, and not truly an actress, that she failed to arouse in others the answering sympathy, which can alone be awakened by the perfect actors or actresses, who themselves feel vividly for the time all the intensities of passion which they depict. Zuleika was a mere mimic, and in her mimicry her real inner nature had no share, her soul no part, and this was the reason that her deepest protestations of love left my heart still in doubt, her most carefully acted devotion left me still suspicious and distrustful, for while I argued that she showed me all the affectionate attention a husband could desire,
My instinctive sense of the unreality of her loving words and soft caresses kept my heart restless and unsatisfied. In the struggle, these two women, who both sought to wield power through their influence over the king, were pretty equally equipped, the qualities possessed by each being balanced very evenly, for whilst Yulika's youth and beauty, her art, and her perfect coolness of temper gave her certain advantages over the queen, the latter had the influence of years, the ties of long affection, the habit of obedience to her in the past to aid her, and had it not been for the interposition of a power, with whose influence neither had reckoned, it is impossible to say, which would have been the victor, or, which would have had to yield to the supremacy of the other. As it was, they each affected a friendliness they did not feel, and each believed they had deceived the other. Chapter 23, The King's Favors. Soon after Zuleika returned from her audience with the queen, I was summoned to attend the king, and sent on a mission which took me away for a few hours of the evening. On my return, I went as usual to take my parchments from their box, for I was deeply interested in reading those I had at last brought from my dead master's house. They contained a most curious description of the means whereby the spirits of the astral plane, and the multiform beings of an evil nature who hover around the earth, could be controlled and made to serve man as humble, if dangerous servants, a knowledge which Jalal ad-Din had withheld from me. I had almost finished the manuscript, and thought I would do so before I slept. When, however, I opened the box, I perceived that they had been disarranged. They were not in the order in which I had placed them, and on taking them into my hands I at once became conscious of a fresh influence pervading them. Someone had been to the box. Someone had discovered my hiding place, and my treasures were no longer safe. Much agitated by this discovery, I resolved to lose no time in placing them in a fresh place of concealment, and taking the box with me I went out, and mounting my horse again rode away unattended to a lonely spot a few miles from the city. Here I buried the box under some wild tamarisk bushes, and, having carefully removed all traces pf my having done so, returned unobserved to my apartments in the palace. Who it was who had found out my manuscripts, I could not guess. Zuleika I did not suspect, and the influence of the person who had been handling them was a strange one to me. Doubtless, thought I, some servant had done it and finding the box contained no money, left it alone. I wished now I had not so hastily destroyed the magic mirror in my anger, for it might have shown me something. My own powers were not available unaided, because the bustle and confusion of my present life, my anxieties and worldly thoughts, had impaired them so much that I could no longer command my visions, or behold things I wished to see, save in fitful uncertain glimpses. The mirror had aided my weakened powers, and formed a means of reflecting in a semi-material manner the multitudinous events that were taking place around me, or had shadowed forth those which were approaching. I had now no means of forewarning myself of the plots and machinations which were gathering around my path, and the dim sense of coming evil which oppressed my soul only served to render my own unaided powers still less fit for use. All my dreams were broken and disturbed, and the pictures in them were like distorted reflections in the broken fragments of the mirror, which in my passion I had destroyed. All the omens around me seemed to point to some great misfortune, or even to death, whose, I could not see, but I felt that my own fate was involved with that of others. The atmosphere of the palace oppressed me. The manner of Zuleika was so artificial in its semblance of affection that I began to suspect her. The king, whose mind I could often read, gave me the feeling that he was meditating some treachery towards me, how or in what way I could not see. The queen I had always felt to be my enemy, as I was hers, and I had little doubt that she was planning some mischief against me. In this state of affairs I resolved to leave the palace and the king, and to seek out Aunt Zulid and learn what he could do for me. Well would it have been had I but done so promptly, and left the very night I found my parchments had been tampered with. But I hesitated. I wished Zuleika, as a matter of course, to be the companion of my meditated secret flight from the palace, and she refused to go. She was most indignant at what she termed my folly, my insanity, in proposing to throw away the favor of the king, the position of honor, which I had enjoyed for such a very few weeks, and all because, forsooth, I had bad dreams, suffered from forebodings, and was suspicious and distrustful. She assured me of the favor the queen had shown her, but she did not add that the king and she had met daily, and that his favors had considerably outweighed in value those bestowed by the queen. She coaxed me, soothed me, she practiced all her arts to tranquilize my mind, and so great was her magnetic power, she succeeded in lulling me into a pool of mental torpor, though she could not beguile away my apprehensions. In truth, she was seeking to gain time. She did not wish to put herself absolutely in the power of the king till she was very sure that the foundations of her influence over Selim was secure, and strong enough to bid defiance to any assaults of the queen or any other person. She did not want me to come to any harm, she was not heartless enough for that, but she did want to get me out of the way as quietly as possible, since I had become a barrier between her and her ambition. She had never really loved me, and, strange as it may seem, she had conceived a passion for the king, born principally of her admiration for his power and wealth. She wanted me to go away, but she had no idea of accompanying me. Events had hurried on so fast that it was not yet 2 months since Selim had ascended the throne, scarcely 2 weeks since Zuleika had arrived from Herat, and yet the current of our lives was bearing us on in a rapid rush towards a mighty whirlpool of destruction. The impatience of the king was precipitating the crisis of Zuleika's fate, which she was vainly striving to delay. In less time than a week from the time when I had discovered that my parchment scrolls had been inspected, I was sent for by the king, and informed with many flattering speeches that it was his desire to appoint me governor of a distant province for a short time, in the absence of the present governor. "Ahensiman," said he, "if for these few weeks you dost find that the cares of government are to your taste, on your return we can think of some position about the court to suit you, and this experience will give me excuse for appointing you unto it. For myself, I feel now so well I think I can dispense with your constant presence for a short time, and when you dost return you shall find we have not forgotten you in your absence. I have here a letter, written and signed with mine own hand and seal, which you shall give unto the governor whose place you are to occupy for a brief season. It tells him how highly I esteem you. As for your wife, Ahensiman," he added, coloring confusedly, for my eyes were intent upon his face, and his own fell before my gaze, "as for your wife, my mother will charge herself with the care of her till your return. She had conceived a great liking for her. Surely you wilt feel that she is safe in the charge of the queen?" I bowed to him in silence, for my thoughts were in a tumult, and I could not trust myself to speak. He handed to me the letter I was to deliver to the governor, and as he did so his hand shook as the hand of one with a palsy, while his eyes sought the floor, and he said in uncertain tones, "Ahensiman, it is because of my friendship for you that I send you on this mission. It is that I may have excuse to confer upon you yet higher honors. You are of too great value to myself for me to send you forth without good reason, and I shall await with impatience the hour of your return, oh, my friend." His words were the words of friendship, but I knew that he lied to me, for I could read his thoughts. Though I could read at the time the thoughts of none other around me, I could read his, and I knew that he lied, for in his heart he said that I should never return, since he was only sending me to find, not honor but my grave. In my anger at his ingratitude and treachery I would have drawn my dagger and stabbed him to the heart as he sat there, for he and I were alone, there was none to witness our audience. But I restrained myself, and though my fingers played with the hilt of my dagger, and mine eyes gazed at him with a steady look of scorn, till he quailed beneath their glance and thought to summon his guards, I drew not my weapon. I contented myself with a haughty bow to him as I said, "Oh, sire. Well do I know how to value the favors of kings, and greatly do I thank you for this last, this crowning mark of your honor and your regard." Then I went forth, and sought Zuleika, that she and I together might leave this palace of evil omen. Again and again I sought to take her with me. Nay, in my anger and suspicion I even tried to take her by force, for she refused to go with me. She wept and implored that I should leave her where she was. She vowed she believed in the friendship of the queen, and she refused to believe that any harm was meant to me, and at last when I tried to force her away she turned upon me in hot anger, and vowed she would rouse the palace with her screams if I did not go and leave her. "Wait," said she, "and if you dost not return I will go to you, but I shall not be hurried thus away for your foolish fancies, your unworthy suspicions of your best friends." At last I was so angry that I left her, saying in my wrath that if her heart was with her new friends rather than with her husband, they might keep her body with them also, but in mine own mind I vowed to myself that if they sent me away, I would return unseen, as I well knew how to do, and would learn the meaning of their strange desire to be thus rid of me. It was early morning when I set forth, and all that day I rode on at the head of my troop of soldiers, and it was as though all the black devils of hell rode with me, so full of bitter anger was my heart, so bent was I upon my scheme of vengeance. "For," said I to myself, "if Zuleika be false to me, if she had stayed while I am sent away in order that she may become the plaything of the king, verily, as there is a sky above our heads, as certainly as there are powers of evil around us, it shall be no common revenge that I shall exact from those who have wrought the ruin of my life. And by the powers of Ahriman, they shall die, each one. The devils of the darkest hell shall drag them down there together. If truly you hast spoken to me, O my dead master, if your mirror lied not when it showed unto me the vision of Zuleika and the king, then of a truth will I call on you and your unseen servants of darkness to aid me in my revenge." I had scarce quitted the palace half an hour ere Zuleika, who was all impatience to possess herself of my mysterious parchments, went to look in the former hiding place for them. As I had been led to imagine that I was only to be absent for a short time, she did not suppose I would take them with me, and she was still further reassured upon this point by seeing that I departed without any box resembling the one she knew to contain the coveted scrolls. Her dismay may be imagined when she found the hiding place empty and the papers and box gone. She turned deadly pale, and for the first few moments, it seemed to her that all was lost, for I must have grown suspicious and taken them with me. The glance which the court astrologer had obtained of the papers had been too hurried to allow of his mastering their contents in a way to prove of any practical value, and who knew what I might do were my suspicions fully aroused. Zuleika flattered herself that she had sent me away angry, no doubt, but yet in ignorance of the fact of her infidelity to me, and she hoped that ere I discovered it, she would make her position with the king so secure as to enable her to defy my anger. She even hoped that she might be able to evade all consequences of her treachery. Now, however, with the scrolls gone as well as myself, how were they to protect the king? At any moment he might be taken ill again, and her fine castle might tumble about her ears. She dared not tell Artemisia of the loss, but she sent for the court astrologer, and with many wiles beguiled him into promising to help her in keeping the disappearance of the papers a secret till it was possible to obtain possession of them again. This he assured her. He had a very safe plan for doing, although he declined to tell her what it was, merely assuring her that there were others besides her husband who could cast spells and cause missing property to be found. "This man had no particular love for me, as indeed he could hardly have, seeing how I had supplanted him and cast discredit upon his skill, and he was only too ready to assist in hastening my downfall. He sought out the king, and with much caution informed him that from studying the stars, he perceived that it would not be possible that I should be allowed to continue my journey. Were I to do so, disaster would overtake his majesty." "Oh, sire," said the astrologer, "while he lives, danger will menace the person of the king, for so did it appear in my vision, and only with his death will the life of your majesty be secure." The astrologer prostrated himself before the king, but even while his head was bent down, his cunning eyes were striving to read the effect his words had produced upon his master. As for Selim, he was visibly disturbed, and after twisting nervously at the fringe of his sash for some moments, he replied, "You sayest that were Ahinzaman once dead, his power would cease and I should be safe. To secure this, it needs not that we should recall him, for, behold, I have myself thought his power boded no good to me, and though he carries with him a letter of friendship to deliver unto the governor, I have sent a swift messenger before him with another, wherein I have directed that he be imprisoned and slain. It needs not that we recall him. I desire not his return." The astrologer started with surprise at this speech, and answered, "True, O king, yet the governor of that city had no knowledge of occult things. He will slay Ahrimsemen, without doubt, but he will not extract from him first the knowledge we desire. Ahrimsemen will die without releasing your highness from his spell, so that the last state of your majesty will be worse than the first. Had my august master thought fit to consult me, his humble slave, I would have warned him of this danger. Now I only pray that Ahrimsemen may be recalled, in order that ere he dies, we may force him to withdraw his spells, and disclose the source of his secret power. It needs not that he should approach your majesty, or guess why he had been recalled." Again the king hesitated, then fear for his own safety, and a feverish desire to put an end to his present state of suspense, prevailed, and summoning his scribe, he gave the required order for my return, and a messenger was sent in hot haste to bring me back, on the plea that the king had forgotten something he desired to tell me. The crafty astrologer returned from his audience well pleased, for he did not doubt that he should now be able to get me into his power, and force me by means of torture to disclose where I had put the missing parchments. Chapter 24 The Dark Angel's Help. At nightfall we pitched our tents on the outskirts of the Great Salt Desert, and so soon as I had seen to the arrangements for the repose of my escort, I retired to my own tent, and gave strict orders that I should on no account be disturbed. As soon as all was quiet around me, save for the measured tramp of the sentry before the door of my tent, I took from my bosom the scroll, which I had last brought from the secret repository of my dead master, and trimming the little lamp, which burned in my tent, sat down to try to read over again all that it said about the methods of controlling the mysterious forces of the astral plane. I had a vague, confused idea of turning those powers into an instrument to execute my meditated vengeance, but in the agitated state of my mind I felt it impossible to think out any plan clearly, or to still the wild throbbing of my brain. I would have given anything now to possess again the magic mirror, which I had destroyed. I wanted to see Zuleika, to learn what were her real motives in remaining behind. In vain I tried to read the scroll, the characters danced before my eyes, and only a word here and there could I decipher. I thrust it from me at last, and rose to pace backwards and forwards in the little tent, as a relief to my restlessness. I had taken but a few turns when the sound of a deep sigh, uttered as if in mockery of my own, saluted my ears. And in the farther corner of the tent I saw a dim, black, shadowy figure, shrouded in a mantle. It seemed to waver and grow faint, then gather together again, and become more distinct, yet always with the appearance of being a mere reflection, a veritable shadow thrown upon the curtains of the tent. For several minutes I watched it in silence, then I called aloud, though in a low voice, "Who art you? From whence hast you come?" The shadow grew darker, stronger, more sharply defined for a moment, and as I gazed, I recognized the majestic figure, the regal poise of the shrouded head, which I had seen in the veiled angel of darkness, which I had beheld so long before on this very desert plain. There was no figure visible this time, only this dark shadow of its form, veiled and shrouded as before. A soft mocking laugh came like a distant echo to my ears, and the sound of a far-off voice seemed to speak this answer to my question, "You dost ask who I am? You, who shouldst know me well, since I have constituted myself the guide of your life, and have helped on the accomplishment of your ambition. You did desire to climb, and you hast climbed high already, although you hast not yet reached the pinnacle of your desire. My hand had helped you up step by step, and now in the hour of your anguish, you dost still hesitate to call upon me for aid. Your heart is sore. Try, then, the sweet balm of vengeance which I can offer you to soothe its pangs. You dost speak of vengeance, O you angel of accursedness. Canst you show me how to pierce a palace wall, and drag from its shelter those who I deem have wronged me? Canst you show me, and show me truly, what my wife doth now? Of whom she dreams? I would know the truth as it appears unto the eyes of God. Canst you, whose powers are evil, show me that, which is true?" The figure seemed to rise up before me, till it towered above my head, and casting back the mantle bade me look upon the face of the dark angel, and gaze into his eyes. And as I strove to do so there came a face, as living and distinct as mine own, into the shadowy form. The eyes looked with steady gaze into mine own, until it seemed as though they would scorch me with the lightning of their glance. The haughty brows frowned at me in mingled rage and scorn, and from the compressed lips these words came hissing in a fierce whisper, "Can I show you those things, which are true, you dost ask? Dost you think all that is evil must be false? Is there not the germ of truth in all things? Yea, even, in that, which would have seemed the grossest falsehood to you once, had it not been proved already there was truth. I am an angel of darkness, and in mine own dark realm I reign supreme, over beings as vile and evil as any in our dread kingdom of hell, but in all my court there are no liars. They who lie must even seek another king, since I have naught in affinity with them. Search the spirit world from end to end, if you canst even in imagination do it, and you wilt ever find that like draws unto like, treachery seeks unto it its fellow traitor, but even in the lowest depths, such as you and I have no affinity with the mean liar, the snake-like friend, who stabs in the dark, while his face smiles unto you by day. Behold, I am a ruler in hell. I am as evil as is the most evil of the angels of Ahriman. Murder and war, bloodshed and revenge, destruction and fear, follow in my train, but falsehood knows me not, deceit flies before my approach, and if I show you aught there will be at least truth in what I show. You wouldst see your wife? Behold her now. He waved his shadowy arm, and in the corner of the tent there appeared a crimson star, held in a circlet of gold like unto a crown. Around the star, a grey mist like a veil appeared to float, and as it grew thinner and thinner the star shone out with brighter rays, and by its light I saw that the circlet of gold encircled the woman's head. More and more transparent grew the misty veil, and I saw Zuleika. She appeared to stand before a mirror of polished steel, and to poise her head gracefully, first on one side and then upon the other, while she watched the jewel sparkle amidst her long, floating hair, and her face was wreathed in smiles as she admired her own beauty reflected in the burnished steel. She was attired in her richest dress, the dress which Artemisia had given her, and her bare arms and throat sparkled with jewels which I had never seen her wear. From whence had she obtained them? I asked in my jealous anger. As though in answer to my thought, she raised one hand to her lips, and kissed with passionate delight a ring she wore, a man's ring. Oh, powers of heaven! I recognized it then. It was the king's signet ring. She spread out her hands and looked at it, as a child admires a new toy. She coquetted with her own reflection, she pouted, she frowned, she smiled, yea, she even half blushed, and drooped her eyes in sweet and mode's confusion, as though she parried the advances of a too ardent wooer. It was not my wife I looked at then, but some young shy maid, who dreams for the first time of love. Suddenly her manner changed, as a fresh mood seized her. She threw up her head in haughty grace, she walked a few steps forward and then back, as though she were a queen, she held out her hands, as though to raise some suppliant, she signed imperiously to an imaginary companion to be gone, and turned away with a contemptuous frown, and a proud toss of her head, worthy of a queen. Then she changed again. She became all radiant smiles, a bewitching rapture, and held out her arms as though to embrace someone, whose her lips murmured, "Not my name, but that of Selim." So realistic was the vision that in my rage I rushed forward, dagger in hand, to stab her to the heart, and like a thing of mist she vanished, and I stood alone in my tent. Even the shadow of the dark angel had vanished, but his voice was still audible to me, and as I drew back, trembling with anger and disappointment, he said, "You dost know now how false is this daughter of the serpent, and you wouldst desire to kill her. If so, you canst only do so in your own material body. The powers which I wield have no influence over her, or over that false queen who killed your mother, and had ruined your own life. They belong not to the sphere wherein I rule, and the stars of those two women dominate your, so that on the spiritual plane of your earthly lives, they shall prevail against you. To avenge your wrongs upon them you must obtain power of a material kind, and while I can aid you to obtain this, I cannot affect their welfare, either materially or spiritually. With Selim, it is different. He hovers between two spheres,